Hey, hi, everyone. I'm Mark Mazur. I'm a CISO for Entertainment Partners.
Yay!
Yay! Yay!
I'm Janelle
Romberg.
I've been working
at ET
for 5 years in product management technology.
We have a walkthrough of what we think about security at UB. We're going to talk a little bit about our products, about how we organize security, but it isn't sales pitch. This is really basic security strategy discussion. And the reason for that thought is I'm a practitioner. I live and breathe security every day to protect EP. Of course, I deal with the product side as well, but generally my purpose in life at EP is to protect EP, so I thought it would be good for us to have a conversation on how we do security at EP as a general practice. So introducing yourself again, I'm the CISO again, CISO for about 20 plus years with that title, which is a long time in the CISO world. That's about when the CISO titles came around, working Fortune 100, Global Aerospace and Defense, and Entertainment. And Janelle?
Sure, yeah. I've been in leadership roles in the entertainment industry for the last 5 or 6 years, mostly working in product management.
Okay, so the fear slide. So everybody's afraid of security. You heard a lot of good points, I thought, from Tony and a few others in the previous discussions around security and why it's so important. We all get that. Our personal lives have challenges around security. Our corporate world and our products all have security challenges. It is a fact of life. But there is some real fear here, and the fear is real. We Hollywood itself, the entertainment industry. You know, I've been an outsider. I've been at EP less than a year. I came from a global defense company as a CISO. And I can tell you that the industry itself is a little bit behind as it relates to where the maturity of security is related to defense, finance, and other industries. So with that, you see a lot of compromises. You see a lot of breaches. And you see that up here. You see that with regards to just, a couple days ago, some challenges, studios recently with some data losses and things like that. If you're not familiar with ransomware, you should get familiar with it because it's probably impacting you personally or professionally. Point is, there's a lot of fear, and it's real. It's not
unfounded.
I don't know, it's been a long day. Okay. So this typical security world, when you're thinking about IT and information security, we call it information assurance, about risk and management. There's tons and tons of tools. There's tons of vendors that will sell you this wonderful new product that may or may not work. You may or may not ever have to implement it. The value proposition of that is really good on paper, but when you actually implement it, it really doesn't do that much. This is the stuff we see. I can tell you the recent ransomware issues as a CISO. I got calls right after that. If you heard the name WannaCry. Right after that, I probably had the very first next day in the office, I probably had eight or nine voicemails around how some product could have fixed that for us. And that's just the nature of this. It's obviously there's a lot of money in these tools. But it's not simple. You can't just deploy any one of these crazy tools. Not that the tools don't have a place, they do, of course. But that's not the answer. The answer is not to pick one of these tools and go deploy and say, yep, check, we've done that. And I think that's a lot of the maturity areas of security that maybe in this industry and other industries, of course, of finding that magic piece of software, hardware, that's going to fix the problem for you. And it really doesn't. It's people and process that are going to fix the problem, and the technology is going to help augment that. So when you're thinking about security and building a strategy, what's really important? So that's the very first question. And it's even in the IT world or even the production world. What are you trying to accomplish? And this little slide here. So what I'm thinking about security, and hopefully you do too, is, what are you trying to do? What's the purpose of that law? It's like that Zen moment. What are you trying to get to? Are you trying to protect that car from the toll, or the toll from the car, or even the lock from the pole or the car? Right? What are we trying to accomplish, right? So that's the idea behind a strategy. Think about what that end state is. The first question you're going to ask yourself in the security world is, the first known fact is, you can't protect everything. You are going to get breached, and you are going to lose data, or you're going to have a compromise of some sort. So if you know that going in, you can't say, I'm going to be perfect, I can't go to my work Because we won't. It just won't happen. So what are we trying to focus on? What are we trying to protect? Is it sensitive data? Is it customer confidence? Is it customer products? What's most important? It could be all three. But maybe that desktop on the receptionist's desk is not that important. And you have to kind of say what's not important as well as what is important. And it's really hard for some companies and organizations to understand. So a couple steps. I broke down like 8 or 9 steps that we think to help define a security strategy. You can take it for what that's worth. You can say there's probably 50 steps. You can maybe say there's 3 good steps. But these are some general guidelines. Once again, it's just to give you an idea of what a CISO thinks about when you're building a security strategy. So define your adversaries. I'm just going to focus light up. So when you're talking about threat modeling, you might have heard this term before, and it's kind of understanding what's important and what's not important. So part of what's figuring out what's important is figuring out the threats to what's important. So when you think about your adversaries, who are you up against? You can't say we're up against everybody, because everybody will beat you. But if you're up against a specific type of adversary versus another type of adversary, you can protect against that because they have different methods. So I wrote 4 types of adversaries here. Nation states, those flags, China and Russia. Could be others for Sony, North Korea, right? But the point is, they are highly funded. So if a nation state is after you or some asset that you have, assets or data or some type of physical intellectual property or virtual, they're going to come after you in a very specific targeted way. So I come from the defense world prior to EP. One of our key concerns there was a nation state stealing our intellectual property or military secrets. That's a different type of threat model than an organized crime that's going after your credit card numbers or your social security numbers. So how you figure out what's most important, how you invest, how you change and implement, it's got to be about that threat model and that adversary type. Opportunity, you know, organized crime, they're very well positioned in the in the world. They've got a lot of investments. They're, you know, the crazy stories of tailored viruses that have helped us. So if you want to write a virus, you can call them. They'll tell you how to write it, that kind of thing. But they're very well matured and have a good model around attacking. Opportunistic groups, things like hacktivists. You've heard of Anonymous and those kind of groups. So is that a threat to your organization? My last organization, it was a real threat because we made military products. Those military products, some people didn't like we made military products. So hacktivists didn't like us because of that. That's a different type of threat model than a nation state. And then one of the most concerning adversaries are insiders. And being the CISO, one of the key concerns I have are IT folks. We give the keys and kingdom to the IT folks, right? Somebody's got to have godlike access to your sensitive data. Well, that doesn't mean they're not an adversary. So you have to think like that, I have to think like that as a CISO, to ensure that I'm protecting the organization from ourselves. And that's usually the biggest threat, to be honest. Nation states, yeah, trying to take that guy. But the reality is, insiders do more harm and do more damage. So step one, define your adversaries. Think about your threat model. How you position against that specific threat. No company's going to look at all 4 of these and try to protect themselves for. So build a strategy. Don't overthink it. You know, sometimes strategies are, you know, like a 50-page Word document with all kinds of thoughts and details. No, that's not a good strategy. A strategy is tactical, smart, and executable. So what do we do? And I'll be very honest. These are absolute slides we use internally. This is not made for this session. So what do? We look at it in 2 different ways. How do we operate securely, and how do we architect and govern ourselves? That's it. That's the 2 main, there's a lot of stuff behind that, of course. That's how we're thinking about security. Not some big grandiose thing. It's very tactical and smart. Left-hand side, we're talking about the classic IT security areas. Things like how to, you know, firewalls, anti-malware protection, vulnerability management, incident response, risk management, resiliency like disaster recovery, those kind of things, high availability, identity management, life cycles, all the classic IT security areas. On the right-hand side, we're mostly thinking about our products. How do we embed security principles in our products from the entire life cycle, from design to delivery? We throw other things in there about governance, risk, and compliance. That's the classic SOC 1 and SOC 2s and ISO 27001. Some companies have SOCs, some companies have other obligations, particularly global companies with European obligations, things like that. We think about education and awareness both for our customers and our internal employees, but the main area there is our product security and how we focus on that trade delivery model. That's it. That's the idea behind the strategy. So if you look at it and say, what are we focused on from a strategy perspective? This is it. This is what we're doing. It's no secret. We're not trying to hide anything. This is it. So you figured out who your adversaries are, and you put that threat model together. Now you've looked at your overall strategy. Now you've got to define your focus. So we define our focus. Once again, we know, as all companies should know, we're going to be hacked. We're going to really have a breach. And I probably shouldn't say that to our customers are not. The reality is, we're as much at risk as anybody else if we don't do some of these very thoughtful areas. So we're going to prevent as much as we can. We're going to respond when something bad does happen. We're going to govern ourselves to ensure that we can have that governance model in place to we know what we're doing right. We're going to figure out our cornerstones of our program. So we figured out the strategy, we figured out our threat model, now we're going to look at the cornerstones. And it's much more, and this is the hard part in the security world, it's about talent. Both from your partner perspective and as well as your employees. I don't know if anybody that lives in the security world, trying to hire a security person today's world in the LA market is incredibly difficult. I've had positions open for 200 plus days just to try and find somebody, the right person. So strong talent has got to be there. That culture of compliance, embedding the compliance model into your organization from all the way up to the board of directors, all the way down through sessions, it's got to be part of that. And then how do you manage incidents? It's always going to be part of that. That's the number one goal. Focus on the basics. So I tell my team this all the time. If we are not protecting the environment, we can't respond to a security event. We don't have the basic IT architectures in place, and our identities are not correct. We're managing identities through the lifecycle from our products to the internal systems. We're not doing anything right. So start with the basics and focus on the basics. Ransomware issue over the past couple weeks, the basics would have prevented that if you had an issue. So it's just patching, and it's segmentation, and it's some type of incident management, malware protection, and advanced malware stuff, right? That is bread and butter. But I'll go back to the comment I made earlier. 10 years ago, 5 years ago, the companies that put all that information were looked at this ransomware issue and go, eh, no big deal. But the companies that got hit are not looking at the strategy, right? So focus on the basics. So secure by design. Obviously, we deliver products to our customers. Security has to be embedded into our products from cradle to grave. It's one of the most important things we'll do as a security organization at EP. So how do we do that from inception to delivery? So design requirements. So we have a standard release cycle about how we develop a design criteria. And some of these people in the room about, I have a great idea. I have a customer feature request. Whatever the requirement is in our products, how do we figure out how we do that as an organization? The security folks are in design discussions day one. It isn't something we're going to do a pen test at the end and try to figure out the whole thing later. The security folks are in the design discussions and in the whiteboard discussions up front. And that, if you're not doing that up front, then what you do later is just very costly. Develop standards. Very basic stuff, right? How does a developer know how to code something to protect against SQL injection? They should have a standard and a tool and a way to manage so they know from their design lifecycle up front. Testing. So our security testing is part of our QA process from design and delivery. So as the QA engineers are actually looking at it, and the developers are actually building code, they have an automated testing process. Sometimes you hear fancy terms like dynamic testing, static testing. It's built into that process. The right resourcing. Once again, those skill sets define the people that can look at code from a security-specific focus and inject principles and standards is really difficult to do. Sometimes you got to outsource that, but we have internal people that do that. I'll be very honest, it's quite an investment to have that kind of skill set. And performance, how do we govern ourselves? How do we know we have the right KPIs here? Create a culture of compliance. So we picked, here are a lot of frameworks in the security world, if you're familiar with it. You've heard of ISO, you might have heard of PCI, you might have heard of HIPAA, Those are kind of frameworks. We picked something called the NIST Cybersecurity Framework. I could spend probably an hour talking about that, and I won't, but go Google it. NIST Cybersecurity Framework, it is considered the gold standard in security. Used to be kind of ISO was the gold standard, but it is the NIST Cybersecurity Framework is that. I recommend if you're not thinking about that, to go think about that. And we picked that as our framework. We tie it into our ISO certification. So, you know, it's a domain-based model. Once again, you can talk, I can talk about this for hours, but domain-based certification model, so we have that comfort level for our customers. We also do SOC 1 and SOC 2, of course, for the audit criteria. Awareness and education. We benchmark ourselves on an annual basis. What that means is we have an outside expertise come in and look at how we're doing security and help us adjust based on threats and what's going on in the marketplace and things like that. And then we wrap it around a governance risk and compliance model. So we have a team of people that do nothing but manage policy and ensure governance end-to-end, whether it's physical security, all of IT security, to development and on. Okay, so you've gone through all these steps, you've built a program, you've executed the major criteria, you've done your investment criteria, your threat modeling. Now you've got to deal with the impact, because I think I'm not sure if you mentioned it earlier, but every security action has an impact to our user community, whether it's internal users or our customers. So that has impact. So impact has to be part of the threat and the management process. So very simple for security guys to say, just don't do that, but it breaks the process, right? We don't want to be there. We want to enable the business or enable our customers, but ensure that we've got security model. So as we're doing the design criteria, and we're ensuring that SQL injection is not going to be part of our code delivery, we also have to have an impact discussion around that change. It's vital to have that. On the internal side, on the corporate side, you can have changes to, you know, 6-character password minimum standards to 8-character password minimum standards, right? What is that true impact to the organization? Very simple thing to think about, but it may be very impactful to the user of the app. And then operate support with quality. So you built the structure, you built this investment, you built the program itself, and I gotta run it. So there's all kinds of excitement in the security world to buy new tools and put new programs in and put all these technologies and everything else, but then the real hard part comes is you gotta run it day to day. So for us, we've got dedicated engineering teams. When I say dedicated engineering, dedicated security engineering teams. These are highly qualified engineers working on the day-to-day engineering builds and execution. We've got something we call an integrated operations center, a NOC, like a super NOC. People looking at systems 24/7 and looking at all the different feeds, and it's aggregated and correlated and all those kind of things. And then it's fed into threat intelligence. The internal SLA for an critical incident, an EP, is 15 minutes. That means something happens, within 15 minutes, somebody is actioning that. 24/7 by 365. If you're not doing it at that level, you need to be. It's that quick. There is the speed factor in security is paramount. We've got dedicated operations delivery teams, and we do some cloud infrastructure. We do support some of our products in the cloud. We're going to talk about one here in a moment, Smart Start. It does run in the cloud. But our model and our program accounts for that. So we have something called a parity model. So everything we do is on the on-prem or on our own data centers, we extend to our cloud model. And we cannot have any difference between our cloud or our on-prem model. And that's also paramount, because sometimes you think the cloud is insecure by nature, or it's somebody else's problem. It's not. It's your problem, and you know that you're in the model. Okay. That was kind of it on the steps. We're going to, kind of, the next couple slides, we're going to talk about how we applied those steps into one of our newest products called Smart Start. And then Janelle's going to start.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. So Smart Start, as Martin mentioned before, we try to have security at the forefront of everything that we're thinking. So Martin mentioned a few times of Smart Start's a great product because using it as a use case of kind of showing how we take security seriously at EP is that the security team has been a part of our decision making from day one. So what is Smart Start? For the people who don't know what Smart Start is, it's it's EP's electronic onboarding system. What that means is that we completely digitize the entire crew onboarding start packet. So crew members show up for the first day of work, they're required to fill a big piece of huge packet of paper that then get floated around the production office in a very insecure way. So what we try to do, and Aaron kind of mentioned this a little bit before in the morning session, is that we not only want to digitize what we're doing here, but we want to reinvent the way that we're thinking about it. How do we make it better? How do we make, how do we heighten our compliance? How do we make our data have a little bit more quality to it, or a lot more quality to it? And most importantly, how do we emphasize security? So when we look at SmartStorm, when we think about it, every single crew member on the production will touch the system. And that's one of the only vendor systems that we have, or the first vendor system that we have that does that. So it's paramount that we have the highest security levels. We not only collect important PII information, but we're required to, but we're trusted by our clients to manage that PII information. So also we have a few clients here today that have been using it. So if you have any questions about SmartStart specifically, I want to focus more a little bit more on security, but we have Melissa and Sean here, both here, who are happy to, I'm sure, happy to talk to you all. So here's a little bit of the numbers of SmartStart. I want to emphasize that this isn't something that we're just talking about. We launched in February, and so far, these are some of our stats from the clients that have onboarded. In addition, when we say we're not just talking about it, we've had a lot of penetration tests happen for SmartStart, and as Martin said before, we don't just think about it as an after fact. It's been going on through the entire development cycle, so you know, that's where we are with SmartStart today, and we're excited. If you have any more questions,
and then just to close it out, so how do we take those steps that I mentioned and apply it to SmartStart or any of our products? But very tactically, we figured out who our adversaries are. This is a high threat model. It's an internet-facing application or product. It sits in a cloud environment. It's got sensitive data. So from a threat intelligence, like go back to my adversary slide, who wants that data? Organized crime wants that data, right? And it's in a high threat, high risk model. Right, so we're going to think about in our design criteria sensitive data protection. What does that mean? We encrypt the data at rest. We have escrow key-based management, techie words, and all that kind of stuff. We have a detailed incident response and monitoring process, and a high availability self-healing model. We applied our security strategy. Nothing different here. We applied our design criteria and our secure coding process. We completed our penetration testing along the lines of test, QA, UAT, and fraud. We do standard network segmentation to ensure there's no lateral movement after a breach. And we ensure network security next gen firewalls and those kind of things, intrusion prevention. We focus on our critical threats. Once again, who wants that data? Bad guys want sensitive PII data, right? So that's the kind of threat modeling that we looked at. Secure by design, once again, that's that criteria, the design criteria in the SDLC process. And we operate. So we operate with quality. So self-healing automation, a lot of investment in the infrastructure and ongoing operational management as it relates to security and operations. So we eat our own dog food. We looked at that from a design criteria all the way to the delivery criteria. As Janelle just mentioned, this product just went live in January, or February. But obviously we were building in 2016, so that criteria has been built in 2016, so nothing new in those projects. And I think that was it.
Yeah.
Any questions?
What attributes are you looking for in an application's design?
Well, also, I can start if you don't mind. So there's really two pieces of that. There's the architectural piece that Martin could probably speak a little bit more about from a back-end security, but I can speak a little bit from the front-end security of it. There are some items that we put, tools that we utilize on the front end of the system, so it has that much more security. For example, we've noticed that crew members like to have a place at the production office to sit and do their paperwork on a machine. And so the idea is that there are crew members potentially queued up behind them, looking over, seeing what they're entering in. So we've done some tools and working with the security team to mask as they're typing in, or to automatically sign them out once they're done with their start packet, so they're not accidentally leaving proprietary or PII information on the machines. But I'll let Martin kind of speak to that.
I think it's a good example, because that's part of that threat modeling, right? So how are people going to actually use the product? So if we just generated a new website and thrown it out there, that's one thing. We can protect that, of course. But what is the actual use of that? What's that threat and risk around that use? As integrated to the design criteria of the development process, So we do an agile development methodology. Part of the teams that are part of that, they have a representation from a dedicated security architect, depending on the size, maybe multiple security architects. They're integrated into Scrum, so they're integrated into the different criteria. They have requirements in the Jira processes and the workflow processes, and it's part of that cradle to grave and full gate-based models. It cannot go to the next level of development until passing security. Any questions? Yeah, sure.
You were discussing that you're not finding the right talent.
Hard to.
Yeah. What is it that you're looking for? Something much more specific?
Yeah, so we break up my organization, the security organization, has security architecture engineers. So you need somebody from a development background. You need somebody from a security background. Finding that secure development resource is a really hard thing to do. So what we've done, in some cases we've done, is we've found really strong internal people, development leads, we convert them into security. So big investment in developing their skill sets. They've got that development product up, you know, base. And they get security base. We've also had security operational engineers, incident responders, incident management groups. We've got risk and governance compliance people. Those are completely different skill sets. You can't take a security operations engineer and expect them to know, understand an ISO. Right, so finding those people in that different type of skill set, number one, as a lead, it's expensive, and two, it's hard. It's hard to find those people. Any questions? We're getting the wrap up.
We're getting the wrap up.